And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. And this segment's coming to you on January 15th, 2015, from the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, www.freakradio.org. Want to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy, because Uncle Dennis might be reading some things that you might want to take notes on, like names, addresses, phone numbers, web pages, dates, times, locations. You know, somebody to scream at, somebody to send an email to. All that might happen in the next half hour. So, be ready for it. Here it comes. Announcements. Mountain Justice Spring Break 2015 is coming up March 7th through 14th, somewhere in Southwest Virginia. We don't know exactly where. I found this announcement on the Earth First Newswire. We are excited to announce that for the fifth year in a row, the Renew Collective and SAMS will be hosting Mountain Justice Spring Break Virginia from March 7th through the 14th, 2015, in Southwest Virginia. As a participant, you'll engage in the environmental, health, economic, and social impacts that decades of coal mining as a mono economy has had on the Appalachian communities, and learn about organizing and resistance efforts beyond mountaintop removal. You'll learn about a broad range of environmental and social justice issues in central Appalachia, and the exciting work being done by community groups to transition the economy and build resilience. Our days will consist of workshops, service field trips, and opportunities to network with other activists. And our evenings will wind down with citizen and local organizer panels, music, and campfires, story sharing with a diverse group of others working for social justice. Over the course of this event, you'll meet and support the folks working to build a better future for Appalachia, build your own skills as organizers and change agents, and along the way have fun, go hiking, and put in a little elbow grease for local service projects. Once again, Mountain Justice Spring Break 2015, March 7th through the 14th, somewhere in Southwest Virginia. We'll try and get you an update on that a little closer to the date. Here in Santa Cruz, the California Native Plant Society Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is having a special project event to celebrate Martin Luther King Day. Well, it's going to happen on Monday, January 19th, 2015. Now, that's the celebration. Martin Luther King's birthday is actually today, January 15th. But anyway, next Monday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park, in celebration of Martin Luther King Day, we have joined in with the Santa Cruz County Volunteer Center, fellow nonprofits, and community groups for a volunteer service day. We will be back to visit one of our county's crown jewels, the sand hills of Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. The Santa Cruz Sandhills are a unique community of plants and animals found only on outcrops of Zianti sand soil in the central portion of Santa Cruz County in Central Coast, California. We will continue our broom bash efforts, removing invasive non-native French broom. Come on out and give nature a helping hand. How to get to Quail Hollow? Well, take Graham Hill Road north from Santa Cruz. As you come down into Felton, turn right at the light and go up East Zianti Road a couple of miles. Turn left on Quail Hollow. The park entrance is a half mile on the right, and they will meet you in the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and not-so-wild places sometimes. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Please wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. It's going to be shiny, I think. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and your water. Once again, this is a special project celebrating Martin Luther King Day on Monday, January 19th at 10 a.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. If you need further information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number is 831-462-4041. Once again, 831-462-4041, or email her at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at pacbell.net, or visit the website www.cruzcnps.org, that's CRUZCNPS.org. Here's the update from the Buffalo Field Campaign. Their field report comes out every week. More than 35 of America's last wild buffalo have been killed this winter by state and treaty hunters. All but two of these kills have occurred in the Gardner Basin along the northern boundary of Yellowstone National Park. Through hunting and the Park Service's planned capture for slaughter, which is going on right now, we could lose 1,000 of the gentle giants in the coming weeks. While these actions are carried out under the highly controversial Interagency Bison Management Plan, this intolerance is codified in the statute MCA 81-2-120, a law devised by the livestock industry that needs to be repealed. This law is responsible for the slow, steady destruction of the Yellowstone buffalo population. We will be calling on you to help us repeal this unjust law. And support the Buffalo Field Campaign's petition to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to list the Yellowstone bison under the Endangered Species Act. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has 90 days to issue a finding on whether the compelling ESA petition filed in November by the Buffalo Field Campaign and the Western Watersheds Project leads a reasonable person to believe a listing is warranted. A positive finding means the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will open a public comment period to allow citizens to contribute substantive information. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, however, is notorious for using lack of funding as an excuse not to list species that warrant federal protections. This is where Congress and you come in. Congress could allocate the funding, and we need you to put pressure on them to do so. Please contact your United States senators and representatives and strongly urge them to fully fund the Endangered Species Act and to designate the necessary financing to review the science for listing wild bison. Buffalo Field Campaign is asking you to volunteer. They're seeking buffalo warriors for the current field season. The Buffalo Field Campaign has openings for field volunteers. They're in great need of folks during the current field season that runs through May. And wild bison are currently migrating into Montana. Any buffalo within Montana's border is in danger of being shot on sight, hazed, or captured and shipped to slaughter. All volunteers are provided with room, board, gear, and training. We cater to most any dietary need and respect vegan and vegetarian diets. We are located in a warm log cabin by beautiful Hebgen Lake, just a few miles outside of West Yellowstone, Montana. Go to the website, check for the details on volunteering, give them a call, and we'll be seeing you on the front lines. That webpage for checking out any or all of this information is www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And when you find something you want to send them, send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. Once again, the address, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call, area code 406-646-0070. And when you get in touch with Mike, tell him Uncle Dennis said hello. Once again, the webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And here in California, permanent flows have been ordered to restore the Owens River Gorge fisheries. After years and decades of court proceedings, the Owens River Gorge has begun to receive additional water to help restore historic fish populations and increase fishing opportunities. The Mono County Superior Court recently approved an agreement between the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, Mono County, and the L.A. Department of Water and Power that will govern Owens River flows in the 19-mile reach between Crowley Lake and Pleasant Valley Reservoir, and that's located just north of the town of Bishop, California. The agreement will not affect Crowley Lake for recreation, hydroelectric, or water storage. The new flows have already begun and will be fully phased in over a 3-year period. The Owens River Gorge was once known as one of the best brown trout fisheries in California. The fishery was eliminated by a system of hydroelectric power plants which did not provide bypass fish flows. Under the court order, restoration of higher flows and seasonal flow variation will breathe new life into the lower 10 miles of the gorge by expanding habitat for brown trout, scouring sediments that currently choke the pools and gravels, and promoting the establishment of a riparian forest instead of the willow that grows there now. Flows in the upper gorge below Crowley Lake will remain unchanged in the foreseeable future to protect the Owens Tui Chub and native endangered fish. Implementation of these new flows is a culmination of decades of scientific studies and negotiations. The settlement was influenced by and reflects recent developments in public trust law, especially deriving from the historic Mono Lake decision. In a time when fishing access is at a premium, this is great news for California anglers and anyone who enjoys the outdoors or endangered species. For more information, go to www.wildlife.ca.gov. That's www.wildlife.ca.gov, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And the spotted owl has been told to wait again in this story by Rob DiPerna of the Environmental Protection Information Center. The northern spotted owl is an iconic cornerstone species that has been called the forests of Northwest California home since time immemorial. Despite over 20 years of enhanced protections afforded by the listing of the owl under the Federal Endangered Species Act, the best available science continues to show alarming and precipitous declines of northern spotted owl's vital statistics across the species range. The Environmental Protection Information Center's Northern Spotted Owl Self-Defense Campaign has sought to achieve enhanced protections for the owl in California and beyond. Given the myriad and immediacy of threats to the species, EPIC believes that urgent actions are needed to prevent the extinction of the northern spotted owl. In 2012, EPIC filed a petition with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to uplist or reclassify the northern spotted owl from threatened to endangered species under the federal ESA. Despite statutory obligations to produce an annual 90-day finding on our petition, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has failed to fulfill its responsibilities under the Endangered Species Act. How unusual. In 2014, EPIC reached a handshake agreement with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The service had committed to publishing its initial 90-day finding on our petition by December 12th of 2014. However, the service has once again failed to meet this specified deadline, now indicating that it does not intend to publish the 90-day finding until March 31st of 2015. Meanwhile, EPIC has also submitted a listing petition for the northern spotted owl under the California's Endangered Species Act in 2012. After a great deal of delay, the California Fish and Game Commission considered the petition in August of 2013. The commission found the proposed listing action may be warranted, thus initiating a one-year candidacy period for the northern spotted owl under the California Endangered Species Act, during which time the species would be treated as if it were listed. And the northern spotted owl is thus currently protected under California state law. California's Endangered Species Act requires the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to promptly commence a full status review of the northern spotted owl in California and to produce a status report for submission to the Fish and Game Commission to inform the Commission's final decision on the listing proposal. The Department of Fish and Wildlife status review and report were completed in December of last year. However, the department has sought and successfully received a six-month extension for the submission of its status report for the northern spotted owl. The new release date for the department's status report is now June 26th of 2015. The failure of the wildlife agencies to address our listing petitions and the increased threats to the northern spotted owl in a timely manner bodes poorly for the prospects for survival of the owl in California and elsewhere in the species range. Despite the fact that existing conservation measures for the owl have clearly failed, both the state and federal governments have shunned their responsibilities to ensure the conservation, survival, and recovery of the northern spotted owl in the wild. Instead, business as usual prevails in both our public and privately held forest lands. Preventing the extinction of northern spotted owls is a key to maintaining forest ecosystem health, maintaining species diversity in the forest, and for protecting and connecting our wild places and managed landscapes. The Environmental Protection Information Center will continue to use all tools available to advocate for the conservation and recovery of the northern spotted owl. And if you go to wildcalifornia.org, you can find out more information about northern spotted owls and the Environmental Protection Information Center. And Utah prosecutors are dropping the ag-gag charges against animal activists. In this story by Lindsay Whitehurst of the Salt Lake City, or the Salt Lake Tribune, excuse me, as found on the Earth First Newswire, Utah prosecutors are dropping charges against four animal activists filed under a controversial law known as ag-gag. The activists from California and Maryland will still each face one misdemeanor count of criminal trespass, said Iron County Attorney Scott Garrett on Monday. Prosecutors received the case after the four activists pleaded not guilty last week. The charges being dropped came under a law that makes it a crime to conduct undercover investigations of slaughterhouses and factory farms. It's being challenged by activists who say it was designed to prevent exposure of unsafe practices. Six other states have similar measures, but the only other person to face legal charges was also from Utah. Police say the four activists from the Farm Animal Rights Movement drove onto private property at Southwest Utah's Circle 4 Farms in September and took pictures. Their lawyer says they were on a public roadway and only captured images of farm buildings, not workers or animals. Attorney T. Matthew Phillips said his clients were trying to retrace the pig's path to a California slaughterhouse, not trying to provoke an arrest. Those charged are Sarah Jane Gage, 43, of Los Angeles, Robert Penny, 64, of Laguna Beach, California, Harold Weiss, 34, of Pasadena, California, and Brian Monell, 50, of Mount Rainier, Maryland, according to court records. Phillips didn't immediately return a message seeking comment on Monday. Circle 4 Farms is part of Murphy Brown LLC, a livestock production subsidiary of the world's largest pork producer, Smithfield Foods Incorporated. The Utah farm raises and markets about 1.2 million hogs per year and employs 450 people. Members of the Bethesda, Maryland-based Farm Animal Rights Movement want to end the use of animals for food, according to the group's website, and promote a vegan lifestyle with advertisements and occasional dramatic protests. And the U.S. Forest Service has canceled a $10 million plan for National Public Relations Campaign, also known as greenwashing. In this story by Jeff Bernard of the Associated Press, as found in the Earth First Newswire, the U.S. Forest Service has abruptly canceled plans to spend $10 million on a five-year nationwide public relations greenwashing campaign to brand itself as a public agency that cares about people and nature. The agency was planning on the campaign while it's struggling to pay for fighting wildfires, maintaining trails, and offering timber for sale, all things it's supposed to be doing. It also has faced a major public backlash in the West over plans to close trails and roads to motorized vehicles because of a lack of money for maintenance, as well as to prevent erosion and protect fish and wildlife. Without giving a reason, the Forest Service issued a statement saying that it had not accepted any contract bids and would look for other ways to enhance the public's access to national forests and understanding about what the agency does. Andy Stahl, director of the watchdog group Forest Service Employees for Environmental Ethics, said he thought the agency's leader finally listened to Forest Service employees and no one thought that this was a good idea. Stahl said that after he learned of the contract plans, he sent an email to 25,000 Forest Service employees, and about half of them opened it. He got about 50 replies, all critical, suggesting that the money could be put to better use on providing recreational programs, revising forest management plans, restoring ecosystems, hiring more employees, and lifting a three-year wage freeze at the Forest Service. Forest Service retirees also objected. Al Mateco, retired chief of public and legislative affairs for the Northwest region and head of Old Smokies, which represents about 950 Forest Service retirees, said he received 50 emails from members who were strongly opposed. He said he passed on those objections to Forest Service leaders. Quote, retirees were just amazed that at this time of shrinking budgets, the Forest Service could find $10 million for anything, he said. In the fall, the agency earlier awarded a $526,799 no-bid contract to Metropolitan Group of Portland, Oregon for a branding campaign titled Valuing People and Place in Forest Service Regions Covering Oregon, Western Washington, Southern Idaho, Utah, Wyoming, and Nevada, according to a federal website, fedbizops.gov. It was the only no-bid contract issued by the U.S. Department of Agriculture out of more than 3,000 contracts. Another federal website, usaspending.gov, shows the Forest Service has paid Metropolitan Group $3.6 million since 2011, much of it for the Valuing People and Place campaign. The area covers national forests where the Forest Service has faced intense public backlash to plans to close roads and trails on national forest land to motorized traffic. Metropolitan Group's Portland office did not immediately return a phone message asking for comment. Its website describes the company as a, quote, full-service social change agency that crafts and integrates strategic and creative services. We help our clients with strategic communication, multicultural engagement, organizational development, and resource development to build a just and sustainable world, unquote. The website describes the company work for the Forest Service as helping it reflect on its roots, discover its future, and rediscover the meaning behind Forest Service founding chief Gifford Pinchot's early direction to fund the greatest good. The website adds that Metropolitan Group was helping train Forest Service employees to deal with the public on the agency's so-called travel management plans, and that refers to road and trail closures. The Forest Service filed notice November 28th, the day after Thanksgiving, that it was soliciting bids to expand the campaign nationwide at a cost of $10 million over 5 years. Bids were to close the day after Christmas. It's called the Take Out the Trash season, Andy Stahl said. It's when government does things it doesn't want people to know about. Stahl sent his email on December 26th, and the Forest Service filed notice it was extending the bid period to December 29th. But a week later, it announced it was not accepting any bids at all. And wild bison roam east of the Mississippi for the first time since the 1830s in this story by Susan Cozier of EcoWatch, as found on the Earth First Newswire. When David Kreitz walked out of his apartment last month, he was greeted by a line of six or so bison standing shoulder to shoulder in his front yard. He sidled over to his truck, staring at the huge animals, slipped into the front seat, then closed the door and turned on the ignition. As the pickup slowly made its way down the driveway, the bison lumbered alongside. "It was like I was in Yellowstone," Kreitz said. But he wasn't. His temporary job, which includes the housing, is to remove trees and install fences in the Nakusa grasslands in north-central Illinois, where wild bison recently set hooves down for the first time in almost 200 years. The herd of 30 bison is part of an effort by the Nature Conservancy to restore grasslands in the Prairie State, which, perhaps ironically, has lost more than 99% of its former grassland. In the late 1980s, conservationists happened to be passing by the Nakusa when they heard the call of an upland sandpiper, a bird that breeds in tall grass prairies. The Nature Conservancy then began buying farms in the area as they became available and now owns a total of 3,500 acres. The group is doing its best to recreate a lost landscape, said Jeff Walk, director of science for the Nature Conservancy's Illinois chapter. He knows the prairie won't be exactly the same as yesteryear's, but he and the rest of his team are trying to get as close a match as possible. To do that, volunteers and seasonal employees like Kreitz, who spends the rest of his year working in data centers, erect fences, collect and sow seeds, and replicate natural growth cycles with controlled burns. So far, their work has paid off. Even on a winter day when dry brown oak leaves cling to trees, the undulating hills are colored in red, orange, and gray, a mosaic of newly planted big blue stem, Indian grass, and switchgrass. But by October, the landscape had been missing the one thing it needs in order to really thrive, grazing bison. After decades of preparation, genetically pure bison, which means that they don't have any cattle genes, arrived this fall from a preserve in Iowa. There are just a few herds like them living in reserves across the country, but this group is now the first one east of the Mississippi. So far, the experiment is working well. Aside from a roundup every fall when the bison get their vaccinations, these wild bison will roam across 500 acres enclosed by a woven wire fence. Signs hung on the wire warn visitors that bison are wild, Anyone who hops the fence could suffer the consequence, maybe a horn in the butt, or worse, a trampling. Within the enclosure, the bison eat the grass and avoid the forbs or flowering plants. This helps promote plant diversity, because without the bison noshing them down, the grasses would dominate the prairie, leaving little room for rare species like the prairie violet. The nearly one-ton beasts will also help spread seeds and sculpt the soil with their hooves, something researchers will study on site. The other thing is bison poop. They're very productive, says Kirk Hallowell, a volunteer steward and my guide for the day. The bison pies will fertilize the soil and attract insects, which will hopefully bring birds. If all goes well, Nachusa Project Director Bill Kleeman and ecologist Cody Considine will open up more land to bison next year. Despite the project's success, the land will never be what it was 200 years ago. The bison each have an identification chip embedded in them, and seven of them wear GPS collars. They'll never be able to roam wherever they want, and people will always have to manage fires on the land, raising the question of what is truly wild, but it looks wild enough for now. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening, right here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you'd like to hear a rebroadcast of this Earth First Update, please tune in tomorrow afternoon right here on Free Radio 1013 or www.freakradio.org at 3 p.m. If you happen to be in Moscow, Idaho, you can tune in to 90.3 KRFP Radio Free Moscow, 9:30 on Monday nights. I believe that's Mountain Time. And up there north of the border, Radio Free Edmonton. Also at YEG Radio at WordPress.com. That's YEG Radio at WordPress.com. You can hear them rebroadcast the Earth First Update at 2 p.m. on Saturdays and 10 a.m. on Sundays, Mountain Time. Or if you wanted to download or listen online, you can go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net. And there you can listen online or download a podcast of this or previous Earth First Updates. And I'd like to remind folks who do visit radioforall.net that radioforall.net is supported by the community of listeners and downloaders. They receive no funding for the wonderful work they do archiving and presenting material produced by independent and community radio stations like Free Radio Santa Cruz. So please go to radioforall.net and support that project by making a donation online. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio News and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.